Welcome to Catholic Answers Live, the program where you participate with your questions about apologetics and evangelization, including the most important theological, spiritual, moral, and social issues facing the world today. Call now with your question for today's guest, toll-free 1-888-31-TRUTH. That's 888-318-7884. Now, from San Diego, Catholic Answers Live.
Welcome to Hour 2 of Catholic Answers Live. I'm Sherry Brown-Rigg, your host, and Jimmy Akin is in the chair now to answer your questions on this Tuesday edition of the Open Forum Q&A. And before we head to the phones and officially welcome Jimmy, just a plug for tomorrow, Father Vincent Serpa will be here on The Chaplain Is In for Hour 1. And Hour 2 is a pro-life open forum with Dr. George Delgado. So another great show. As tomorrow, Jimmy, is the big announcement on the brand new host here at Catholic Answers Live.
Yeah, so this is the last show. This hour is the last hour of the show before the new host is debuted. And I already know who the new host is, but I'm not allowed to say.
Somebody is going to twist your arm and try to get you to say it, no doubt, but we'll protect you. So, but it comes early in the show tomorrow, and from what I understand, the new host will actually be hosting tomorrow, so this is going to be very exciting.
Yep, but that's my understanding, and the new host is someone who is not and has not previously been on the staff of Catholic Answers. So that's all the clue you're going to get.
That is a wonderful clue. Now you've got people all over the country. They're stroking their beards and thinking hard about that.
It eliminates all but about 8 billion people.
Narrows it down considerably. Excellent. Excellent. Well, we do have a number of calls that have come in, and let's head to the phones now. First of all, that number, 888-31-TRUTH, if you would like to get in on this very historic hour, 888-318-7884. We have Anonymous who has been hanging on. Anonymous, thanks for your patience, and welcome to Catholic Answers Live.
Am I on?
You sure are.
Okay, thank you. Jimmy,
yeah.
This is, I'm going to read something from the Register.
Okay.
The Catholic Register, recent edition.
Who's writing? Who's writing?
Pardon?
Who is writing? Who's the author of this piece you're about to read from?
Oh, I don't have the paper, and so I can't do it. It's on the front page, and it's the article on Amoris Laetitia.
Laetitia, uh-huh.
Okay. And what I read is from page 6, and it's at the very top of, almost the very top of column 5.
Okay, what's it say?
Okay. All right. The writer says this respected individual raises the case of a person, this is quote, raises the case of a person who wishes to refrain from conjugal relations, but doing so would cause the other party to leave the irregular union, perhaps to the detriment of children. In such a case, the person is not desiring the sinful behavior, and therefore is not culpable of it. And then there's a couple sentences down. It is an approach, this is an approach, long adopted already by confessors. And so my question is, two questions though, really? And the other one is, what if you change this business about the detriment to children, and it is just a detriment to the person who would be kicked out of the house and not have a roof over their head and food in their belly and is very ill. Is that really a long adopted stance by confessors already?
Well, okay, so there are a number of challenges in answering this question. The first one is, I don't know who's being quoted here. It sounds like the article is quoting someone else, that this isn't the reporter himself speaking or the columnist himself speaking. I don't even know, is this a column or a news story? If it's a news story, this is likely to be a quote attributed to some other individual. I don't know if it's an exact quote, because oftentimes when you get interviewed over the phone, they don't quote you exactly. I also don't know who is being quoted, and so I don't know what level of expertise they have in this area. So it's kind of hard to provide a useful answer to this question. What I can say is, yeah, I'm sure that a lot of hosts, a lot of confessors, especially in the last 40 years, have done exactly this. Because in the last 40 years, there's been a crisis in the sacrament of confession where many confessors have been too lenient due to adopting erroneous understandings of proper pastoral care and what the sacrament, how the sacrament should be administered. So I wouldn't be at all surprised if there are a lot of confessors who've been doing this in the last several decades. That's a separate question than has it been longstanding in the sense that it's been done for longer than 40 years and it was something that was accepted by the standard moral and pastoral theologians 100 years ago. And that I am not familiar with from my reading of their writings. I haven't seen anybody adopting this stance in their writings. I have seen people among older moral theologians saying, okay, if you have people who are in innocent ignorance and it's going to cause problems that are worse than what you're trying to cure, then you can leave them in their innocent ignorance until such time as they're able to progress in their ability to embrace a knowledge of the truth and bring their situation more in line with what God desires. But that's based on innocent ignorance, not based on someone who says, I know full well that this union is not valid, but because of children, I'm going to sleep with this person anyway. I'm not aware of older moral theologians saying that's okay, and that's what I would have a big question about. I would be very interested to see older moral theologians saying that because I'm not aware of any who do that. And that's about as much as I can do with the answer given the limitations I mentioned earlier. So thank you very much, Anonymous.
Yeah, thanks, Anonymous. We appreciate that call. Heading from Anonymous to Los Angeles, California, listening on 9:30 a.m., Johnny is here. Hi, Johnny. Welcome to Catholic Answers Live.
Hello. How are you doing today?
Just fine. What's your question?
Good, Johnny.
Hello, Jimmy. First of all, I just want to say thank you for the DVD you recommended, Understanding Revelation.
Oh.
Beautiful. I viewed it, and I passed it off to a friend where he could view it also, and I also got The Fathers Know Best. Excellent.
Oh, great.
So that's very, 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 very helpful. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Yes, my question is, my brother just sent me a text. He wanted to know how Catholics view Jews.
Okay.
View Jews.
Is there anything?
Yes, I do know.
With our eyes would be my first thought, but I suspect he may want something else. Do you have a sense of what angle he's asking the question from?
The other day we were arguing about the Sabbath, maybe.
Okay.
The Sabbath day into the Lord's day.
Okay.
I don't know. I know we're talking about them being. I know they're non-Christian. So
well,
I don't know exactly.
Except for the ones that are.
Yeah. Okay. So okay. There are some that are Christians.
Yeah,
so,
like Saint Peter and Saint Paul and Jesus. Well, Jesus, you could say he's not a Christian. He's the Christ. But so let me take a stab at your answer. Christians, and including Catholics, recognize Jewish people as one of the many peoples of earth that God created, and they have a special role in God's plan. That's why they're referred to sometimes as the chosen people. They have a special relationship with God, but it's not an exclusive relationship with God. So Gentiles also can come into union with God, and thus there are both Christian Jews and Christian Gentiles. So the Christian community and the Jewish community overlap. They are a people that God has used in many ways historically, not only in all the different incidents we read about in the Old Testament, but also in that he chose to have his son born among the Jewish people as Jesus of Nazareth. And so there are, if you want to put it this way, there are elder brothers in the faith. They've been following God for a long time, and many of them have embraced faith in Jesus Christ. Some have not, but hopefully more will. And we even have an indication in the New Testament, and the Catechism of the Catholic Church also talks about this, that there will be a significant conversion of Jewish people to Christ before the end of the world. In terms of practices like the Sabbath, that's a practice that, which means, you know, consecrating Saturday, the seventh day, to God in a special way. That's a practice that God ordained for the Jewish people in the Old Testament. It was not something that was ordained for Gentiles, just for the Jewish people. It was one of their distinctive laws. And Christians, and this is certainly the church's understanding, regard the Sabbath as not obligatory for Christians because, as St. Paul says in the Epistle to the Colossians, the various Old Testament observances, like the Sabbath, were a shadow that pointed forward to Christ. But now that the substance has come, now that the thing that casts the shadow has come, now that Christ has arrived, the shadow has fulfilled its purpose. And so now no one, St. Paul says, is to judge you in how you celebrate or whether you celebrate a festival or a new moon or a Sabbath, those being the three kinds of holy days on the Jewish liturgical calendar. So we're not obliged to celebrate those. Instead, we celebrate the first day of the week and consecrate that one to God specially because that was the day on which Jesus was raised. And as early as the first century, like in the book of Revelation, you have Sunday being referred to as the Lord's Day because it was the day of our Lord's resurrection. Does that help?
Yes, that helps a lot. You know, he's at work right now, so I have him review it. And if he has any other questions, I'm sure to be calling back or the apologetic line I can also call.
Okay, sounds great.
That sounds great. Johnny, thank you so much on that. Appreciate that. And by the way, you can always hear the podcast of this program. Just check it out at Catholic.com. We're going to take a short break, coming back with a lot of other great calls here for Jimmy Akin. Yours might be one of them, 888-318-7884. We'll be right back on Catholic Answers Live.
Catholic Answers Live.
Hi, this is Trent Horn, and I'm here with a very special offer for all of you who are interested in standing up for the rights of the unborn. January is Pro-Life Month, and to get as many people as possible involved in the pro-life cause, we're making my book, Persuasive Pro-Life, available for just $5 a copy. That's a savings of over 70%. I wrote this book specifically with you in mind, to help you engage in sustained and meaningful dialogue with the goal of persuading others, to help you to change people's hearts and minds, so that together we might build up a pro-life culture, one person, one conversation at a time. To get your copy of Persuasive Pro-Life, How to Talk About Our Culture's Toughest Issue, for just $5, call 1-888-291-8000 or go to the shop at Catholic.com.
Homeschool Connections, an online provider of courses for your Catholic homeschool, is a sponsor of Catholic Answers Live. Homeschool Connections' website is homeschoolconnections.com.
Hello, my friends. This is Christopher Check, president of Catholic Answers, inviting you to join Tim Staples and me next summer, June 3rd to the 10th, as we sail from Montreal to Boston. Joining us also will be special guests, Patrick Madrid of Immaculate Heart Radio, and my brother, Father Paul Check. Catholic Answers has been the gold standard of Catholic cruising for over 15 years. This cruise will be the perfect blend of apologetics, church history, and spirituality as we talk about how to transform our land in Christ. We will explore some of North America's most magnificent churches, including the Shrine of St. Anne de Beaupré. We are also planning a special pre-cruise event in Montreal that will include a pilgrimage to the tomb of St. Kateri Tekakwitha, the Lily of the Mohawks. All of our cruises include daily mass, opportunities for confession, and the convivial company of fellow Catholics who share your love of the faith. Signups are brisk, so please don't delay registering. For all the details and to register, visit CatholicAnswersCruise.com. That's CatholicAnswersCruise.com.
Call now with your question, 888-318-7884. This is Catholic Answers Live.
Indeed it is, and we've got answers for your questions here about the Catholic faith, about Scripture, whatever you'd like to ask. Jimmy Akin is here, 888-31-TRUTH. But before we get back to the phones, we've got a wonderful cruise coming up. You may have heard just a little bit about that. And Chris Check, president of Catholic Answers, is in the studio with us to tell you a bit more. Boy, does this sound like an incredible opportunity, Chris.
It is going to be a wonderful cruise. But Sherry, before I say that, I just want to tell all of our listeners, I want to remind them that Trent Horn tomorrow in Atlanta is going to be debating Protestant apologist James White on the topic, can Christians lose their salvation? So if you're in the Atlanta area and you'd like to go see this, go to the Catholic Answers webpage, or excuse me, Facebook page, and all the details are there. The good news is that you don't have to be in Atlanta, even in the United States, to watch it because it's going to be live streamed. Mm-hmm. So this is going to be a terrific debate. Trent is a magnificent debater, and White is a worthy opponent. So this is going to be a lot of fun to watch and very informative. So if you want to watch Trent Horn debate James White at 7 p.m. Eastern, go to the Catholic Answers Facebook page. All the details are there. Now, the cruise next June 3 through 10 on Holland America's Vandam, Montreal to Boston. The theme is the church in the new world. Father Paul Check, my brother, is the chaplain. Tim Staples is joining us. And our good friend Patrick Madrid from Immaculate Heart Radio. We're also going to have a three-day pre-cruise event in Montreal called the City of Saints, where there are four saints there and plenty of blesseds. And right now we are running a New Year's special. So if you book now, you can get $100 off per person, and you want to enter the promotion code NY2017 for New Year 2017. So NY2017 on your online application. Go to CatholicAnswersCruise.com. Save $100 by booking now. And one more thing, Sherry. Tomorrow, mm-hmm. we debut the brand new host.
We were talking about that.
Oh, okay. Of Catholic Answers.
And I said I know who it is, but I can't say.
Yes.
But I did give them one clue.
Okay.
I said that it's someone who is not and hasn't previously been on Catholic Answers staff.
That is true.
So that narrowed it down to about 7 billion people.
Right.
Yeah.
Good. All right. All right. Back to work, you two.
What a slave driver he is, right, Jimmy? Boy, yeah. I tell you.
Let's take some calls.
Let's take some calls. Next up, we have, let's see if I can get this right. Is it Alias from Arcadia, California? You are on the air, my friend.
Hello, yes. I had a question for Jimmy Akin regarding when someone goes to the Mass, for example, the regular Mass, I guess we could call it, and sometimes the priest will, like, you know, first there's a sign of the cross, and there's maybe the opening prayer, things like that. Mm-hmm. And then there's sometimes they'll start talking, or maybe they'll make a little joke about a football team, or even sometimes even during the homily, there's a little bit of, you know, some humor in there, mm-hmm. or there's clapping
or attempted humor.
Or things that, like, yeah, so I'm just wondering,
yeah.
is there like is that all right to do, or is it a gray area, or like how do you? It seems like some of the sacrality of the Mass just kind of
goes
away.
It's a prudential call. It's permitted for the celebrant or even some other people actually to provide a brief introduction to the Mass of the day. It's also permitted during the homily to illustrate things in a way that will help people assimilate them better. And sometimes humor will do that. Humor is something that engages people's emotions and that can make them more receptive to what you're having to say. That's why virtually every public speaker uses humor or other points of contact with the audience as a way of helping engage them and helping them appreciate and accept what he's saying. It's part of persuasive speaking. And so it's appropriate in principle for priests to do things like that. Having said that, it's not always a good thing because sometimes it does detract from the sacrality of the Mass. That's called doing it badly. And sometimes, you know, priests have really good intentions, but they're just not the most gifted comic ever. In particular, I find, and I've been thinking about blogging this, I find sometimes priests, because one of the things that you learn when you're trying to write or speak persuasively is that people are wired for stories. We really appreciate stories. We focus on them. We it makes it very easy for us to learn and assimilate something if you can illustrate it with a story. And sometimes I very frequently have seen priests start a homily with an anecdote of dubious historicity. You know, they'll say, some nameless time and place this happened, and you're not sure if they even want you to really believe that. And then they build up to something that is an attempt at a joke, and it sometimes is really not that funny. And frankly, we've already got stories because the Gospels are stories. You know, the Gospel reading is a story every Sunday. Just, I want to say, give me that, you know. And so I certainly agree that that priests can do things the wrong way in homilies. They can include too much humor. They can include too much illustration from other life contexts. They can include inappropriate humor or inappropriate material from other life contexts that can distract from the sacredness of the Mass. But in principle, there's nothing wrong with providing humor or providing illustrations or references to other things in our lives and our culture. So in principle, it's not wrong, but it's a judgment call about which specific things you're going to use. And priests don't always get it right because they're human like everybody else.
What do you think, Elias?
I also find like sometimes there's a priest that's really good priest, mm-hmm. but like he'll give us an extreme like explanation before each reading, mm-hmm. and that's good. But I'm wondering if is that a place to do that or
one can briefly. I mean, the liturgical documents expressly provide for briefly introducing the readings. If he's going on a big long tear about each reading individually, that's probably beyond what the law provides. It would be better to do a brief introduction if he needs to and then clarify any details during the homily time.
Right. Okay. All right. Thank you.
Sure.
All right. Thank you, Elias. Appreciate that. All right. From California, we go to Kansas. Colleen is there listening to Divine Mercy Radio, 88.1 FM. Hello, Colleen. Welcome to Catholic Answers Live.
Hello. I have another clue about the new hire. It's not me.
Okay.
My question is, when Mary and Joseph went to Bethlehem to give birth to Christ, he had to be presented at the temple within 8 days. Is that correct?
We had to be circumcised on the eighth day.
Okay.
The presentation at the temple is... The presentation at the temple is later.
Okay. Because my question was, did they have to travel to Jerusalem to...
Not for the circumcision. Circumcisions are typically performed wherever you are. Just wherever you are on the eighth day after childbirth, you circumcise the baby boy. Because otherwise, I mean, you'd have people, let's say, way up in northern Israel... which actually isn't big by modern standards, but let's say you're way up in the mountains in northern Israel and you've got a baby, you don't rush down to Jerusalem to get the baby to the temple by the eighth day. That could be even be dangerous. And so circumcisions were just performed wherever people were typically. And eventually there was a need for Mary and Joseph to go to the temple, but it wasn't for a while. And also, you may or may not be aware, Jerusalem and Bethlehem are really close by. You know, Bethlehem is like 5 miles south of Jerusalem, and so you can walk there and back in a couple of hours.
Right, that's what I was thinking. Mm-hmm. But my other question is, you know, they went for the census. Are there any preserved documents that they...
No.
They were.
No.
Okay.
In fact, it's not even clear exactly what the nature of this was. Luke calls it an enrollment, and many people have interpreted it as a tax census, which could be part of why Joseph needed to go home to Bethlehem because that's where he had some property. But it's actually not clear, was this a tax census or a different kind of enrollment? In any event, unfortunately, all of the secular records for this have perished. Many of them may have perished either in Roman archives or when the temple was burned in AD 70.
Thank you, Colleen. We appreciate that. Lots more to come here on Catholic Answers Live, the open forum Q&A with Jimmy Akin. Stay with us.
Catholic Answers Live.
This is Tim Staples, and I'm excited beyond words at the latest release in our Catholic Answers Classic series, The Faith of Our Fathers by James Cardinal Gibbons, a book that was instrumental in my own journey to the Catholic Church. When it comes to books specifically aimed at our separated brethren who name the name of Jesus Christ, Faith of Our Fathers is simply unequaled as a work of apologetics. The breadth and the scope of this book is astonishing. In one volume, Cardinal Gibbons moves from the Trinity, the four marks of the Church, the papacy, and the communion of saints, to the Marian doctrine, salvation, purgatory, and the seven sacraments, to the Inquisition, the Crusades, the celibacy of the clergy, the priesthood, and more. Do yourself or a friend a favor. Get your hand on this book right now. You can do that by calling 1-888-291-8000, visiting Catholic.com, or asking for it at a good Catholic bookstore near you.
It's 2017, and as you begin another year, it's likely you've made resolutions you know you may not be able to keep. Well, here's one you can. Catholic Answers Magazine wants to help you build on your knowledge of the faith on a regular basis. And to help you keep this resolution, every 2 months we'll send you a new issue as a reminder, keeping you motivated all year long. Subscribe now to our award-winning Catholic Answers Magazine and get the best teaching from the most respected thinkers and teachers in the Catholic Church today. Time is ticking. Call 1-888-291-8000 or visit Catholic.com now to subscribe to what has been called the best Catholic magazine anywhere. New Year's has come and gone, but it's not too late to make this resolution. Call 1-888-291-8000 or visit Catholic.com today to order your subscription and get started on a resolution that you can keep.
Welcome back to Catholic Answers Live. The number again, if you'd like to join us, 888-318-7884. 888-31-TRUTH. And lots of great callers already lined up. We'll get back to them momentarily. But I want to tell you about a special that is going on for only two more weeks, only through the end of January. Trent Horn's book, Persuasive Pro-Life, How to Talk About Our Culture's Toughest Issue, is on sale at a 70% savings through the end of the month. And that makes it only $5 per book. Now, that's a special price. That means not only can you get one, but you can get one maybe for a book club at your parish, if you want to give it to many of your friends. You know, the sanctity of life is something that we as Catholics, we very much protect. And we as the Catholic Church, that is something that is really a non-negotiable. And it's really under attack right now. And lots of folks are out there raising money for Planned Parenthood. It's important for us to really know what those persuasive pro-life issues are and how to talk about that particular issue. So grab the book. You can get it at Catholic.com. Just visit the shop there. You can call the order line, which is 1-888-291-8000. But keep in mind that we only have that on sale for two more weeks at that special price of $5. Heading back to the phones, Jimmy Akin. First up, we have Blake. He is in Amarillo, Texas, listening to St. Valentine Radio there at 1360 AM. Hey, Blake, welcome to Catholic Answers Live.
Hey, how are y'all?
We're good. What's your question for Jimmy tonight?
Okay, so my wife, if she gets her tubes tied and we perform the conjugal act, am I liable for that sin even if I don't agree with her choice?
No. The sinfulness of that pertains to this is the act of getting one's tubes tied, which is the deliberate causing of permanent sterility. Having conjugal relations after permanent sterility sets in is not sinful. Otherwise, people who are past the age of childbearing would not be able to have conjugal relations because they have permanent sterility at that point. They're past the age of childbearing. They can't conceive, and so they're permanently sterile. What's different about the situation is that your wife, if she were to do this, would be causing the permanent sterility, not just accepting it as a consequence of the natural aging process. So she would be mutilating her body by disrupting its functions. And that would be the sinful act, not continuing to have relations afterwards. Having said that, there would be on her part, presumably, if until such time as she repents of getting her tubes tied, she would presumably be reaffirming by her will that, oh yeah, that was a good thing I did. I reaffirm having my tubes tied. And that's a sinful attitude towards the act. She's reaffirming it in her heart. And she might do that on occasions of conjugal relations. She might do that on other occasions too, when she's just thinking about her life. So it's not simply tied to the conjugal act. Consequently, regardless of how if she ends up infertile, regardless of how that happens, it's not sinful in principle for you to continue to have conjugal relations after that happens. You would want to encourage her and at inopportune times to revisit that decision and to repent and recognize that mutilating your body is not the way to ensure having the number of children that you can handle. There are other better ways to do that that are in accord with God's plan, and you don't want to be thwarting the way He designed you by mutilating yourself. So you'd want to do what you can to encourage her to get back to where she needs to be spiritually, but merely having conjugal relations would not itself involve a new sinful act. The sinful act would be what she did back when she had her tubes tied, and then any internal reassenting to that she does later, regardless of when it occurs. Having said all that, I don't know if this is a real possibility or this is a hypothetical question. I would hope it's the latter. But if it's not, I would encourage you to do what you can to dissuade her from this course, because it's a lot better to not go down the wrong path in the first place than to have to backtrack later. And you might, for example, want to – I mean, we have some resources at Catholic.com that might help, but you also might want to contact the Couple-to-Couple League, because they have also kind of specialize in this area.
All right. Yeah, well, and see, she's Protestant and I'm Catholic, mm-hmm. and Dee doesn't view it as a sin. She doesn't view contraception as a sin. She,
right.
In any manner, so, and mm-hmm. her doctor, she's already had 3 C-sections,
mm-hmm.
and so, well, she's going to have her 3rd in April, mm-hmm. and her doctor suggested it because he said it would be unhealthy for her to bear another child.
Well, and that's understandable. It may be, but there's a question of how do you go about, achieving the goal of having an appropriate number of children that's not more than you can handle or that doesn't cause health problems. The goal of properly and intelligently regulating the size of your family is fine. The question is, how do you go about that? If she's Protestant, she may well be pro-life. I hope she is. And you might be able to point out to her, well, just because the goal of not having another child is legitimate, given her medical condition, let's say, that doesn't mean that any and all means of achieving that are good. For example, if she did conceive, you couldn't kill the child. I mean, you couldn't wait until it's born and kill it. That would be infanticide. You couldn't kill it via abortion. That's infanticide in the womb. And so those are means of limiting your family size that are obviously wrong. The end may be fine, but the means is not appropriate. And just like killing a child to limit your family size is not appropriate, neither is mutilating your body and disrupting the functions that God built into it. You can use medical technology and treatments to assist the functioning of the body, but not to disrupt it. And so rather than disrupting her body, it would be better and in accord with God's design for you to work with the natural rhythms that are built into her body to accomplish this goal. And like I said, the Couple-to-Couple League can provide information about that. And also, like I said, we have some resources at Catholic.com, but they specialize in this area, and so I would suggest you check out their website.
All right. Thanks,
Thank
Jamie.
You, Blake.
Sure thing. Yeah.
All the best to you. Thank you, Blake. And next up is Victor. He's in North Carolina listening on Catholic.com. Hi, Victor. You are on the air with Jimmy Akin.
Hi. Thanks for taking my call.
Mm-hmm. Sure thing.
I've heard someone say that the Catholic Church taught that Mary Magdalene was a prostitute. And I tried to find, I was trying to find where they got it from, and mm-hmm. they got it from a homily from Pope Gregory the Great.
Mm-hmm.
And it wasn't really official, it wasn't official Catholic teaching.
Mm-hmm.
From what I understand, it was more of the Latin speaking part of the church that believed it.
Mm-hmm.
And I was wondering, how do you go about talking to them about that's not an official Catholic teaching, even though a pope said it in his homily?
Okay. Well, there are a number of ways of approaching this. Unfortunately, I haven't yet written the book that I would recommend, but I hope to, on how to interpret church documents and understand what is and is not official teaching. In general, things are only going to be official church teaching if, number one, it's a matter of doctrine, and number two, as opposed to, for example, a matter of history. And number two, if it's taught on an ongoing basis so that you can still find references to it in official Catholic teaching documents today, that would be things like papal encyclicals or the Catechism of the Catholic Church. Now, if you look at recent papal encyclicals or the Catechism of the Catholic Church, you're not going to find any references to this idea. So it's not going to be something that the magisterium of the church has been repeating, and it's not something that right there gives you reason to understand this not as a church teaching, but as an idea that Pope Gregory may have been proposing for people's consideration. But that doesn't mean he was saying this is a matter of doctrine. The second thing that you'd want to look at here is the question, which I already alluded to, is this a matter of doctrine or is it something else? Well, church teachings are things like God exists. This is theology. God exists. Abortion is immoral. Jesus of Nazareth is the Messiah. Those are all points of faith. But was Mary Magdalene a prostitute is not a matter of faith. It's a matter of history. That was either something she did during her life or it's not. And so it's not, properly speaking, it doesn't look like a matter of doctrine at all, but as something else. And so that gives you a second reason. Another thing you can do is show what other Catholics, respected Catholic sources, have said on this issue. If you go, for example, to the original Catholic Encyclopedia online, either at Catholic.com or at NewAdvent.org, and look up the article on Mary Magdalene, you'll find that it says that in the East, it's not been the common understanding that Mary Magdalene was a prostitute, but most Latin theologians have thought this, or Latin Bible interpreters have thought this, but the way the article talks about it, it doesn't say anything about, oh, and this is official church teaching. It's just a common opinion among Latin-speaking Bible interpreters. But in the eastern part of the church and even in some parts of the Latin church, it has not been the common understanding. And so it's not something, just reading the article and not finding references to, oh, and this is official Catholic church teaching, would give your friend a reason to understand, okay, that's not what this is. This is an opinion that has been popular in some circles, and my sense is it's a lot less popular now than it was 100 years ago when the Catholic Encyclopedia was written. So I think this opinion has kind of declined in popularity. But even that 100-year-old reference is one that acknowledges there are different views on this and therefore implicitly acknowledges that this is not a matter of Catholic doctrine.
What do you think, yeah, Victor? Does that help?
Yeah, that does help. Thanks a lot.
No problem.
All right. Thank you, Victor. We appreciate that. Listening at Catholic.com. Time for a break, and then we'll come back for our final segment here on this historic hour of Catholic Answers Live. As Jimmy had mentioned, it's the hour the last hour before the new host is announced tomorrow at the start of the show. So if you'd like to join us, hop on a phone line right now at 888-31-TRUTH. And we'll be right back. Got more from Peter, David, Ramiro, hopefully Vicky. We'll see who we can get to on this edition of Catholic Answers Live. Stay with us.
We're glad you're with us. Stick around for more Catholic Answers Live.
Catholic Answers Live is brought to you in part by CatholicSingles.com, the website for Catholics who want to meet others who share their faith and values for faith, fellowship, and love. You can learn more at CatholicSingles.com. Catholic Answers Live thanks CatholicSingles.com for their generous support.
St. John Paul II stated that, for the disciple of Christ, evangelization is a duty, an obligation of love. And the Catechism of the Catholic Church states that evangelization is necessary for salvation.
So we know we're called, but how do we do it?
St. Paul Street Evangelization can help. To learn more, contact us at streetevangelization.com. That's streetevangelization.com.
Layla Rose says, Trent Horn really knows how to get people thinking and talking about abortion. Persuasive Pro-Life is an invaluable handbook for anyone who wants to become more skilled at defending the humanity of the preborn. Order your copy of Persuasive Pro-Life today by calling 1-888-291-8000, visiting the online shop at Catholic.com, or asking for it at a good Catholic bookstore near you.
The Catholic Answers Minute. I'm Father Vincent Serpin. In Mark 2:23, as Jesus was passing through a field of grain on the Sabbath, his disciples began to make a path while picking the heads of grain. The Pharisees immediately accused them of violating the Sabbath. They saw the plucking of the ears of corn and the rubbing out the grain as an example of manual labor. Actually, they had lost sight of the fundamental purpose of the Sabbath law. Such observance is subordinate to the needs of men, who are not created merely to observe the Sabbath. We see the same narrowness today in those who set themselves up as authorities, who judge the validity of the Church's teachings regarding private revelations, the Second Vatican Council, and anything else they disagree with. But in reality, they are actually setting themselves up against God Himself. Why is it that they never question their own authority? It's only through humility that we ever hear the truth. I'm Father Vincent Serpa for Catholic Answers, Catholic.com.
Call now with your question, 888-318-7884. This is Catholic Answers Live.
Welcome back to Catholic Answers Live on the Feast of St. Anthony. And previewing tomorrow, Father Vincent Serpa will be in the first hour. The chaplain is in. And the second hour is a pro-life open forum with Dr. George Delgado. And of course, as we've been mentioning, the new host will be announced at the beginning of that hour. So he or she will be hosting, and it's going to be exciting, an exciting announcement. Right now, though, you've got Sherry Brownrigg and Jimmy Akin is here, and he's answering your questions. And next up, we go to Peter, who is in Phoenix, and he's listening to 1310 AM. Hey, Peter, and welcome to Catholic Answers Live.
Thank you. I have some questions regarding enrollment.
Okay.
And it's really two questions, but the first one involves myself and an ex-wife. We were married outside the Catholic Church, although both of us were born and, well, we were raised Catholic.
Okay.
Baptized Catholics. She left the marriage.
Okay.
And filed for divorce.
Okay.
And that went through. And I wanted to know a little bit about the annulment process so that I may, at some point in the future, remarry.
Let me ask you a question.
In the Catholic Church.
Let me ask you a question. What year did you get married?
What year was 1980?
Okay. And at the time, were you, you said this was in a Unity Church, right?
Correct.
Had you left the Catholic Church and formally joined another church at the time?
I have to say, no, I hadn't formally joined another church, but was certainly not attending any services regularly.
Yeah, not attending is not the issue, but I needed to ask because of a provision that could pertain to this situation. What I can tell you based on the fact pattern you describe is you should, unless there's something I'm not aware of, you should be able to obtain an annulment fairly easily through what's known as the documentary process because you were a Catholic and you didn't observe the requirement of of observing the Catholic form of marriage. You didn't get married in the church, in other words. And you didn't apparently, from what you said, I gather you didn't get a dispensation from form to get married in another church. So because of that, your marriage would have what's known as a defect of form. And for marriages that have a defect of form, they're automatically null, and it's very easy to prove that simply by presenting certain documents. You know, like here's the baptismal certificate, here's the marriage certificate, and so forth. That's why it's called the documentary process, because it doesn't involve a lengthy investigation. You just have to gather the right documents and fill out the paperwork to show the marriage tribunal in your area that that the marriage was null, and so after that, you would certainly be able to remarry. If you'd like more information about that, I'd suggest getting a copy of a booklet that we have here at Catholic Answers called Annulments, What You Need to Know. And it's something that I wrote, and it gives you the basics. Basically, what you're going to want to do is contact your local parish and explain the situation, and they'll help you get started in the process. What's your second question?
All right. The second one involves a lady friend of mine that I'm quite interested in. However, she was married in the Catholic Church and to a man who was not a Catholic. However, he had been baptized in a Protestant church, but at the ceremony, he did receive the Eucharist.
Did or did not?
He did receive the Eucharist.
Okay. That's really not relevant to the question of was her marriage to him valid. In order for her to be free to marry, she would, whether to you or anyone else, she would need to go through the annulment process, and her marriage would be presumed valid because she was a Catholic, getting married in the Catholic Church, and apparently had permission. There wasn't any legal barrier to her marrying this gentleman in the Catholic Church, and so consequently, the church would presume her marriage is valid. And therefore, it would also presume it's sacramental in addition to being valid because this gentleman was already baptized. That means that the process of getting an annulment for her wouldn't be the documentary process. And it would involve a more significant investigation, and the marriage tribunal would have to, you know, interview people by questionnaires, for example, and then make a determination based on an assessment of the facts about whether or not that first marriage was valid. If it was not valid, then she'd be given an annulment and she would be free to marry whether you or someone else. She'd need to go through that process. So in answer to your first question, you should have no problem obtaining an annulment through the documentary process, at least based on what you've said. She might or might not be able to get one. The result would depend on an investigation that would take longer and be somewhat more involved. But still, we have a process in the church for evaluating such situations, and that's what the annulment process is there for. So it's there to help her.
Got it.
Now, in the sense, I should clarify, help her in the sense of understanding, was her former marriage invalid or is it to be presumed valid?
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. Now, I have a third question that relates to Eucharist, if you have a minute or two.
Really quick, because we need to take another call.
There's someone that I know who comes to church on a regular basis, and she is doing all kinds of things that she should not be receiving the Eucharist, but she still goes and receives it.
Okay.
And that bothers me to no end. I go to church, but I don't receive the Eucharist at this time.
Okay.
But she does. She goes and takes the Eucharist. And is there something I should say to her?
Let me mention a couple of things. First of all, I'm not sure why you're not receiving the Eucharist. Even if you've been away from the church, you can go to confession and then go to the Eucharist. It doesn't sound like you're in an invalid marriage right now. And so, you know, I just want to make sure you're aware that it sounds like you could resume a normal sacramental life as soon as you're ready. In terms of her situation, I'd have to know what it is she's doing that would prevent her from receiving the Eucharist. Can you give me an idea in general terms?
She left a sacramental marriage.
Okay.
And then remarried and married someone else.
Okay, so she's living in a presumptively invalid marriage.
Correct.
Yeah, well, that's a situation that is a delicate one, and there's a bunch of confusion surrounding this issue right now. If you have a good relationship with her and you're able to introduce the question and say, you know, here's some information that you should be aware of and I hope it helps you, then that could be an option for you. On the other hand, you don't know what discussion she's had with other people. She may have been told by a pastor that it's okay for her to receive communion in her situation, and you may not be able to convince her otherwise. So it's kind of a judgment call whether to approach her about that or not. Ultimately, she's not your daughter or anything, is she?
No.
Okay.
And I realize that I have a certain distance that I have to maintain there.
Right.
And that is up to her.
Right.
But just to point her in a direction to say, you know, this might not be the best thing for your soul to be doing.
And that's something that if you make a judgment call that that's the best way you can help her, then great. On the other hand, if you sense that that might push her further away from the church or reinforce her in sin, then you might say, I'm going to pray for her and let God find the right channel to help draw her closer to him.
Thank you, Peter. We appreciate that call. Jimmy, let's see if we can squeeze in one more question here. David, listening in Arizona, if you can get that question out there quickly, David, we'll see if Jimmy can answer it before the show ends.
Yeah, really quickly. Thank you for taking the call. The
sure.
question is, say a Protestant being a Lutheran and a Catholic marry,
okay.
they apply for dispensation, receive it. The mm-hmm. father, who's the pastor, performs the marriage, and the children would be raised Catholic per the dispensation and, you know, grow up taking the sacraments. But
that's actually not required in a dispensation from form. The children aren't part of the dispensation from form. Catholics have an obligation to do all that they can to see that their children are raised Catholic, but the Protestant partner in a mixed marriage doesn't have to promise to raise the children Catholic.
Got it. Second part, could the kids attend a Lutheran school?
There's not in principle a reason. They can't. Now, ideally, you want to make sure that the children are given a good Catholic education, and ideally, uh-huh. there will be a good Catholic school in your area that you can afford, and so forth. But if there's no Catholic school, or the one you've got is really horrible, a Lutheran school might, and homeschooling is not an option, then a Lutheran school might be the best available option. So. It's not
right.
an up or down question. It's a judgment call.
Judgment call. And then it would be one baptism.
Yes, only one baptism because there's
one, all the way.
One Lord, one faith, one baptism. You only get baptized once.
Thank you, David. Appreciate that call. And thanks to everyone who called in today. Our apologies to those who did not get on the air with Jimmy. And we do appreciate you calling and hope that you'll call again. Jimmy, always wonderful to work with you.
Thank you. Likewise.
Yes, amen. And coming up, just a few reminders. Tomorrow, we've got Father Vincent Serpa, the chaplain, is in, and Dr. George Delgado, a pro-life open forum. And, of course, the announcement of the new host comes right before that. So we hope that you will join us tomorrow on Catholic Answers. Lots of great stuff coming your way. So keep it tuned right here to the station you are listening to. And always visit Catholic.com. There's lots of resources for you there. Many blessings to you, and may God keep you. Amen.